Here I'm talking with Mike Dubey, who is the Vice President for Corporate Social Responsibility at Green Mountain Coffee. And Green Mountain Coffee Roasters is a special coffee company based in Vermont. It was founded in 1981 as a cafe and has grown from that origin to a publicly traded company. The company offers more than 100 different coffee selections, including certified organic and fair trade certified coffees that sell under the company's name of Green Mountain Coffee and Newman's Own Organic brand. Mike, it's great to have you join us. Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So you have a history with Green Mountain Coffee. Can you tell us briefly about this and how you ended up with Green Mountain Coffee today?
I can. Yeah, when I got out of college in the early 90s, I was at Green Mountain Coffee, but I left in 1996 to get a couple graduate degrees and ended up working on Wall Street for a little bit. And in 2003, I was looking for something else to do, a change in career as well as a change in location. And I came home to Vermont and just reached into the network that I had to see what was going on, what people were up to, share what I had been doing, and the opportunity presented itself to step into this role at Green Mountain Coffee, and I jumped at it.
So the company has a long history of social responsibility, including recycling and composting from reaching back into the 80s. Did they have someone doing CSR when you joined, and what was the expectations for you? What were you able to create?
Yeah, well, when I left Green Mountain in 96, I was there was no position per se around social responsibility, and I was in the purchasing department located inside the operations group, and I was doing a lot of what at the time you would have considered to be the CSR kind of work. So setting up the recycling program and talking about source reduction and writing policies and things like that. And between 96 and 2004, when I came back, they had created a position that was more of like a director-level position around primarily environmental impact, and that position reported up through the facilities and engineering group. And so the position that I'm in, it was actually a brand-new position. It had some history inside the company culturally, but not at the level or with the kind of job description that I stepped into.
So how did you go about strengthening the company's sustainability efforts? How did you figure out what to prioritize first?
Yeah, well, the biggest challenge I when I came in, I thought was really an organizational one, and by that I don't mean the organization. I mean literally getting organized and trying to be more systematic about what we were trying to do and how we thought about it. The CSR ethos at Green Mountain Coffee, I think, has been a very organic one, and that's probably, I should say, pun intended there, in that it sprang up from all different directions. People are very passionate in Vermont and all over the place, but especially Vermont. There's sometimes people make jokes about what's in the water up here, but our employee base very passionate about lots of different social and environmental issues, and so a lot of the ideas and initiatives that have meant a lot to the company over the years and have made a big difference have emerged out of individual employees and their passions and their interests. So I wanted to capitalize on that, not only the history of that, but on that passion inside the employee community. But at the same time, stepping into this role in a senior management role, one of the parts of the mandate that I interpreted was we need to identify a direction in which we can all be pulling. There's so many different things you might choose from if you were trying to design programs, and so many different needs out there in the world. What's the right way to design a program that's going to help make the world a better place, that's going to be meaningful to our employees, and that not insignificantly at all, that will help strengthen the enterprise as a business? And so that was what I set out to do.
So was it interesting? What was the receptivity of having a formalized strategy and program and position for this? Because did people feel like, hey, we mean well, we've got our own ways of doing good? Was it something that they embraced and said, oh, I see, if we can get organized and now that our company is focusing on these one or three objectives, we can really make more of a difference?
Yeah,
did I make that question clear?
No, yes, you did make it clear, and that was an interesting experience for me going through this. And I think the reaction was mixed. I think at one level, having a conceptual discussion with somebody about trying to be strategic and let's all pull in the same direction and let's do things that create value across multiple dimensions, people will nod their heads. They're going to agree with that. It makes sense. But when you get into the detail, and so there may be particular programs that we might have supported in the past that suddenly if we begin to apply a more rigorous strategic lens, we'd say, this doesn't really make a lot of sense. We can't do it. Or maybe we'll do it one more time and then we have to transition out of it. That's when the harder conversations begin to take place, and you'd have some negative reactions there. But if it's as a primary matter, if you've been open and transparent about your process and your intention, then, you know, disappointment it can be there, but it doesn't mean that it needs to ruin the conversation or stifle someone's initiative. The second piece of that, though, that is interesting, that was interesting for me to observe, is when you take other functions in business, like, let's just be generic about it, say finance or operations or marketing, you can go to school for that, and you can learn particular ways of trying to measure success that are generally accepted. And so if you talk about throughput inside a factory, if you're working at a battery factory or a coffee factory or a chair factory, there's going to be different things that are specific, but there's going to be a lot of these measurements of throughput, for instance, or efficiency that are common. And so people that work in these areas develop a common language and a common way of understanding how to measure impact. When you start to create conversations inside a company about strategic approaches to CSR and the value of doing one thing versus another, there is no real set suite of metrics, and everybody has different ideas about what's important in the world and different ideas about what we ought to be directing our resources to. And so that creates another level of another dynamic in that conversation about trying to move your work towards more strategic value.
That seems really difficult. How did you figure out what does this success look like, and how did you evaluate success from 2004 when you started coming in and organizing the company's priorities?
Yeah, it is. I wouldn't say I've figured it out yet, and I don't know if I ever will. I think that is at the highest level. I think that's an ongoing process to try and create the space where you can get to know people and get to know what they're about and understand their concerns and try and bring it into the way you address a particular topic or a particular issue. That's probably communications 101 in many ways, but it's even more important, I think, in conversations about social responsibility to try and create the room for that. A lot of times people don't necessarily want, they don't need to get their way. They just want to make sure they're heard. So that's an ongoing process. And then as far as how do you define success, that is that's another, we could probably spend a day talking about that, right? It's the whole question of metrics and impact in the world of social responsibility. And I don't think for us there's any one overarching metric of success. We have four metrics that we measure at the highest corporate level. But for any project or initiative that you might select, the measure of success is it might be a little bit different for each one. So the four we measure at the highest level are right now the percentage of coffee that we sell by volume that is fair trade, our volunteerism, so it's both in the aggregate and then on an average per employee basis per year in hours. And then the other two are environmentally, operationally focused, our normalized energy use and our normalized, the solid waste that we send to a landfill, also normalized. We don't include in that solid waste that we compost or recycle, which adds up to roughly 50% of the total.
What does that mean, normalized? I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, it just means to divide it by some unit of measure to create comparability. So we normalize by revenue. So ideally, you know, if you were to look at three different coffee companies or three different companies really in any of any industry, you're going to see there's companies of very different sizes. Some are massive, some are small, and it's hard to try and compare them. That's one of the big I don't know what the right word is here. That's one of the challenges, I guess, of sustainability reporting is how do you compare what company X that's a $35 billion company, how do you compare what they do with a company that's a $300 million company? Normalizing, and it's not perfect, but normalizing by something like revenue helps you to do that.
So, and in terms of a management question, because social responsibility extends to so many areas. You just mentioned volunteerism. We mentioned waste reduction and energy, and your local community, as in Vermont or New England or the Northeast, plus your supplier communities. There's so many extensions for social responsibility. How do you, as the vice president in this function, manage all of these areas?
Well, there's two answers to that. One is that we created a framework at an enterprise level that encompasses all the different areas, and we refer to it as Brewing a Better World, and it's just an easily consumable framework, and there's six practice areas there, and this defines really the extent to which the boundaries, I should say, of how we think about corporate social responsibility. So the six are supply chain communities, local communities, the environment, working with others, building demand for sustainable products, and then our workplace. And so that's the universe of CSR-related activities. Within each of those practice areas, there are a variety of topics that we try to address. Now, how do I, as one individual with a small team, work on that? Well, there are certain things that in an organizational accountability sense we are responsible for and we have control over. And those are primarily going to be philanthropic and employee engagement related kinds of initiatives. And then there's a variety of others that we don't have control or authority over, but it's I view it as our responsibility to connect with the people who do and create relationships with them as thinking partners on those topics and issues. And so that would be things like the way the relationship, the employer-employee relationships, or how do we work with our human resources folks as a thinking partner on issues related to that. With our operations folks, similarly on waste and energy, here in CSR, we're not making decisions on what equipment to buy or what kind of trucks to buy or where we ought to site the next facility. But hopefully, we're doing a good job at creating relationships that allow us to have conversations with those people so we can provide input that that reflects the quote-unquote responsibility perspective. That can be an interesting dynamic because in any organization, just because social responsibility is in your title, that doesn't mean you have a monopoly on an ethical outlook on the world. So you really have to be careful how you approach that. But those are the two ways, either direct authority or thinking partner kind of influencing relationship. And I would add, by far, the greater impact is represented in the thinking partner influencing relationships.
Mm-hmm. I like that term. Would you say that a big element to your position is listening to other departments?
Yeah, absolutely.
So could you share an example of a program that, you know, walk us through any program that you like that you helped kind of create or champion, just so we can see the evolution from the beginning to what it is today?
Sure, absolutely. So back in 2005, a little after I started, as part of the work I was doing to try and identify some common direction that we could all start aiming towards, we adopted what we were calling at the time our social and our environmental bottom lines. And to do that, we did some research, and we ended up looking out at the Millennium Development Goals. And from a social perspective, we looked at goal number one, which was about poverty and hunger, and we thought, okay, that goal is number one on this list for a reason. It's incredibly relevant in our domestic and in our supply chain communities. This is a big deal. This ought to be what we aim at. And we circulated inside the company, got buy-in for that. Everybody felt good about it. And then, of course, you stop and you say, well, geez, how are we going to do that? And especially in supply chain communities, how are we going to do that? So what we did was we partnered at the beginning. We partnered with an NGO, a non-governmental organization called the Sustainable Food Lab, to help us try and figure out what we were going to do. And at the beginning, I took a very traditional, linear, kind of mechanistic business approach to this challenge. And I thought, well, what we're going to do is we're going to find the right communities to pilot this work, and we're going to work with the local government. We're going to find out how much they earn. We're going to find out how much they eat. And we're going to then design some grants that will create some community interventions that are going to hopefully improve how much they earn and improve the quantity and quality of what they have to eat. And then we'll come back a couple years later and we'll measure this all again, and we'll be able to document improvement, and we'll measure it, and it'll be great. And it'll be this wonderful case study. And as we got into it, it became apparent that it was a much more challenging task. We designed, with the help of the Sustainable Food Lab and another organization that they introduced us to called the International Center for Tropical Agriculture, and they're based in Colombia, we designed these community-based interviews. And the International Center for Tropical Agriculture went into selected communities in our supply chain in Guatemala and Mexico and asked four questions. First, we defined a good year and a bad year as years where coffee prices were high or where they were not high. But we said, in a good year or in a bad year, where does your income come from? And we use the word income on purpose, not cash, but income. And then in a good year and a bad year, where does it go? What do you spend it on? Then number three, what are the needs, what are your business needs? If you were trying to grow your business and invest in it, what are the things you need to do? And then what does your community need? And we used that to get a sense of what was going on in the community, but also to try and begin to get some baseline information on income, both cash and obviously there's other forms of income that you can use to feed yourself. So income might be food you grow in your garden or food you were able to barter for through services or something like that. And we got our results back, and we brought the results back to Vermont, and then we brought a bunch of other nonprofits in to help us look at these results and try and figure out what are our indicators going to be. What are we going to use to try and give us a sense of whether or not our interventions are succeeding or not? And we spent a couple days doing that. We arrived at a couple that we thought would work, and we felt okay about it. And then we said, okay, let's go back down to these communities, and we'll share it with them. We'll tell them what we learned and what we're going to do, and invite them to continue to be part of this. So this was in December of, I think, 07. And we did that. Everybody was supportive. They validated what we had said, what we did. They were excited to be part of it. So the following year in 08, we said, all right, now that the first research helped us understand what we wanted to look for, now let's do another round of research to really nail down some baseline information on these indicators we've identified. And we with the International Center, again, they designed another set of interviews, only these were going to be individual interviews. And on this trip, Rick Pizer, who's our director of coffee community outreach, he went on the trip with them and participated in giving the interviews. And the interviews, they uncovered some pretty startling and disturbing information that we had never seen before. We found out that, and this was true across, and we did it, this research we also broadened out into Nicaragua. So it was Nicaragua, Guatemala, and Mexico. And the results that we got were pretty consistent across all these geographies and across all the different permutations of a coffee farm. So big farm, little farm, fair trade, not fair trade, estate or smallholder. What we found was that in general, over 50% of our supply chain was suffering from systematic food insecurity for at least 3 months of the year. And they actually had a name for it. They call it Los Meses Flacos, and in Spanish that means the skinny months. And this was just kind of a fact of life in these communities that there's at least 3 months, in some places it's as many as 8 or 9 months, that they aren't sure how they're going to string enough resources together to feed their family. For them, that's just kind of how it is and an accepted way of life. And Rick, I remember so vividly, he came back from that trip. And Rick is he's a past president of the Specialty Coffee Association of America, been on the board of Coffee Kids, been on the board of the Fair Trade Labeling Organization. He's been at Green Mountain for 25 years. So he's been in this space an awful, awful long time. And he had never, never run across this. He just wasn't aware of it. And he came back and he was furious at himself. He was furious at the industry. He couldn't believe no one was talking about this. And it completely transformed the way we then went on to approach this challenge. I mentioned earlier that when we first started, I was taking a very linear approach to it about measure this and weigh that, and then at the end, let's see how it changed. And when Rick came back, what I realized was we really had been spending two years learning what it means to be poor and hungry in these communities. And that really had a big impact on how we've approached a lot of other things going forward in terms of trying to approach it with a learning orientation as opposed to a mechanistic, I'm here to provide a solution orientation. But as a result of that, Rick got everybody together again and said, hey, we have our metric. It's not what we thought it was. It's this measurement about how many months a year do you suffer from systemic food insecurity, and we got to start getting people together in these communities to try and figure out what we're going to do about it. And so over the last 2 or 3 years, Rick has used our position to the extent we can as a convener to bring together a number of nonprofits and other local community folks in Mexico, in Guatemala, in Nicaragua, in Peru. We've expanded it to Bolivia, to Sumatra, and I believe to Honduras as well. The approach that we've taken is let's start with the coffee co-op and approach them. Let's do a diagnostic. Let's find out if there is an issue here, and if so, what's the extent of this issue? And then let's get people together. Let's get the local community people together, the local nonprofits together, and then maybe even bring in some of the international nonprofits that we work with, like Save the Children, Catholic Relief Services, organizations like that. Let's all get in a room and let's do a few different things. Like let's name this thing. Let's acknowledge that it's there. Number two, let's all agree that it's not acceptable. And then number three, let's get